activists who were arrested. We are gathering bail funds as we speak. We're getting lawyers for these folks. Again, another bail hearing is scheduled for the 27th. So right now, we need as much solidarity and support as possible to support these folks and to continue to fight against Cop City being built.
Activist attorney Kamau Franklin is founder of the organization Community Movement Builders, speaking to us from Atlanta, Georgia. And that does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warrenoff, Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamaria Studio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, and Mary Conlon. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Hugh Grand, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, and Dennis McCormick. And our condolences to our dear colleague, Samin Fakhande, on the death of her mother. We're all with you, Samin. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Check out our transcripts, our podcasts at democracynow.org. Thanks so much for joining us.
Fighting for survival is such a boring battle. Wanna get into my car, I wanna drive out to Seattle, where the used record stores have much better prices. But I don't have a car, and I don't have a license. Should I take another walk to the DMV? Get another learner's permit with a picture of me? I'd put it in my wallet along with my $4 and the condom.
Cable Community Radio is listener-supported. That's right. 80% of our funding comes from donations from listeners just like you. You can always make a donation to help keep KBOO independent and non-commercial at kboo.fm/give. But right now, during our end of the year drive, is the perfect time to contribute. Give now and help us reach our goal of $70,000 by December 31st. Make your tax-deductible year-end donation at kboo.fm/give today.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Development and Events Committee meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
This is KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this end-of-year membership edition of the KBOO Evening News, freezing weather tonight in the Portland metro area and across the nation.
The Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs get a historic investment in a new water treatment plant.
And Congress boosts funding to the National Labor Relations Board amid a unionizing boom.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, December 21st, 2022. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Reed Johnson.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. Well, tonight's the longest night of the year, and it will also be one of the coldest nights since 2014. The low is expected to be 16 degrees, tomorrow's high only 18, with a wind chill of zero as snow and sleet fall in parts of the valley. The Weather Service has issued a wind advisory starting at 10 p.m. tonight that'll see gusts between 25 and 55 miles per hour. Hilly areas and East County are expected to get the worst of the wind. Friday will warm up to about 34 while bringing us freezing rain. Multnomah County has declared a state of emergency with four additional severe weather shelters expected to open at 8 p.m. today and remain open until the severe weather passes. Warming shelters include Portsmouth Union, Arbor Lodge, Sunrise Center, and the Oregon Convention Center. No one will be turned away. More information can be found online at multco.us/care-when-it's-cold. So when it's cold. TriMet will be free for anyone who tells the driver they're heading to a warming shelter. Residents can also call 211 to get a ride to a warm space. Christmas won't be white, but warmer with high temperatures near 50, and it will be wet as well.
A massive winter storm expected to hit tomorrow is worrying U.S. travelers. Forecasters predict an onslaught of heavy snow, ice, flooding, and powerful winds from Thursday to Saturday across a broad portion of the country. A surge of Arctic air will follow, and experts say the Christmas weekend could be the coldest in decades. A blast of frigid weather began in the Pacific Northwest yesterday morning and is expected to move to the northern Rockies, then the Great Plains. The Midwest expects heavy rain snowfall, and by Friday, the Arctic cold may spread as far south as Florida. The northernmost regions of the U.S. might see wind chills approaching 70 degrees below zero. That's said to be cold enough to leave exposed skin frostbitten in a matter of minutes. The heaviest snow is expected in Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming. About 190 people are under some type of winter weather advisory. Authorities across the country are worried about the potential for power outages and also warn people to take precautions to protect the elderly, the homeless, and livestock. They also said, if possible, to postpone travel.
Speaking of travel, the weather is seriously impacting it for a lot of people. Yesterday, this winter storm in Seattle caused at least 192 flight cancellations. Greyhound also canceled bus service between Seattle and Spokane. The Transportation Safety Administration already expected December 22nd and 30th to be the busiest days at U.S. airports, with traffic close to pre-pandemic levels. Nearly 113 million people were expected to travel 50 miles or more from home between December 23rd and January 2nd. That's 4% higher than last year, though it's still short of the record 119 million set in 2019. Most travelers plan to go by car, but about 6% have booked air travel. Many travelers could find themselves changing their itineraries over the next several days, and some have already left home early. Airlines began offering fee waivers for inclement weather about 20 years ago. This should give consumers time to figure out alternate days and routes. However, consumers should read the fine print carefully. At least one airline is currently waiving any difference in fares for rebooked travel that takes place before December 25th for flights out of the Pacific Northwest. But if the flights are rebooked to sometime after that, passengers may have to pay the fare difference. Passengers also have the right to ask their airline to book them on a different airline's flight if there are no options that meet their needs. And if the airline cancels the flight, consumers have the right to a full refund, not just a credit for future travel.
Congress has increased funding for the National Labor Relations Board in its upcoming budget. While the budget process has been at a stalemate, there are concerns about whether the agency could remain effective without this funding. Edwin J. Fiera reports.
Congress has approved a funding boost of $25 million for the National Labor Relations Board. Labor experts hope this will allow the agency to better handle a swath of petitions from people who want to unionize their workplaces. According to the NLRB, over 2,500 union petitions have been filed between September 2021 and October 2022, the most the agency has seen since 2016. But since 2014, the NLRB has seen a 25% decline in funding. Erin Mahoney with the Communications Workers of America describes what a better-funded NLRB would be capable of.
A well-funded National Labor Relations Board would mean that we would go back to having on-time elections and not waiting weeks for those to be determined, sometimes months. We'd be able to see decisions made more quickly when employers put forward frivolous appeals and things like that.
Though the agency received $25 million, several members of Congress signed on to a letter saying the agency should receive a $368 million funding boost. Mahoney notes that if a hike had not been approved, it would have further delayed ongoing union organizing efforts across the country. The agency was preparing for dire consequences if the funding didn't come through. In November, the chairwoman and general counsel of the NLRB sent a letter to members of a U.S. House subcommittee urging them to approve a budget increase. Sarah Steffens, also with the Communications Workers of America, describes what a lack of funding would have meant for workers' rights.
Really, there is only one place, the National Labor Relations Board, that protects workers in these situations. So if they are underfunded, it's like tying the government's hand behind its back when it comes to enforcing labor laws.
The NLRB has already implemented a hiring freeze to weather the effects from low funding. The letter adds the NLRB expects to use the additional budget amount for a pay increase in January and to cover non-labor-related inflation costs. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, New York News Connection.
A Michigan congresswoman has introduced legislation to create a restaurant workers' bill of rights. That's in the wake of massive pandemic-related layoffs and unemployment. The resolution, introduced by Representative Rashida Tlaib from Michigan, seeks to improve working conditions and pay. Mike Moran has more.
In response to massive pandemic-related layoffs, new legislation in Congress would create a bill of rights for restaurant workers. Michigan Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib has sponsored H.R. 1528, which was based on responses to a survey from the Restaurant Opportunities Center United. That survey says 85% of respondents reported losing wages, 91% got no hazard pay despite working during the pandemic, and 34% say they were not provided protective equipment while working. The center's president, Siku Sibe, says the resolution would mandate that employers create safe and dignified conditions for employees, provide ample time off, and make access to affordable health care available.
Through 20 years of our engagement with restaurant workers, we have heard loud and clear that the challenges, injustices, and discrimination have many forms and intersect in many policies. This is why we came together to propose a comprehensive and systemic remedy in the form of the Restaurant Worker Bill of Rights.
The resolution is based on a document crafted by the center and endorsed by 55 food service industry organizations, calling on Congress to mandate livable wages and better working conditions for the industry's employees. Many employees report being required to work major holidays, often with no additional compensation, and are provided no vacation, sick, or personal time off. Janet Lathrop with the National Employment Law Project says these practices amount to stolen income.
Each year, workers lose an estimated $15 billion due to wage theft. Workers in the food and drink service industry are more likely to experience wage theft. Restaurant workers also need and deserve unemployment insurance laws that won't penalize them for working part-time or if they're underpaid, as many of wage workers are.
Tlaib introduced the resolution on behalf of the center, which was formed by restaurant workers after the 9/11 terror attacks in 2001. It calls itself the oldest such organization in the country. For Michigan News Connection, I'm Mark Moran.
The federal government will invest $24 million to build a new water treatment plant for the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs Reservation. The current water treatment plant is over 40 years old, and it serves a community of 3,800. A new water treatment plant would mean that residents would have a clean and consistent water supply for the first time since 2019. Warm Springs Emergency Manager Dan Martinez told the Capital Chronicle that the water from the current plant has a smell and odor that many find unpalatable and worrying, but it is not unsafe to drink. Residents have gotten used to boil water notices and frequently have to pick up bottled water for their daily drinking and washing needs. The plant was shut down for 2 weeks between March and April this year after an underground electrical fire at the plant. The Environmental Protection Agency and the Indian Health Authority combined funds from the bipartisan infrastructure law to fund the effort. Jonathan Smith is the chairman of the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs Tribal Council. He said in a statement, quote, "This is a historic investment that will be deeply appreciated by the water by the Warm Springs peoples for decades to come. Planning will begin in 2023.
A House committee votes to release Trump's tax returns. Wells Fargo will pay the largest consumer protection fine ever. And the EPA cracks down on large vehicle emissions for the first time since 2001. With more on the stories, it's Catherine Carley with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times. I will release my tax returns against my lawyer's wishes when she releases her 33,000 emails that have been deleted.
Former President Donald Trump said he was under audit for years, preventing him from releasing his tax returns. Now a House committee has voted to make them public. Democrats said they needed Trump's returns from 2015 to 2020 to assess an IRS audit program. Republicans insist the probe is politically motivated. Lawmakers have unveiled a massive bipartisan budget bill addressing every aspect of federal spending, from military defense to student loans.
For students who are struggling to cover tuition or rent, it means making ends meet just got a little bit easier.
Democratic Senator Patty Murray of Washington noted the bill increases the size of a Pell Grant by $500. Republican Senator Rand Paul says he favors the increase for military spending in the budget bill, but says otherwise it's a blank check for Democrats.
I think the greatest risk to our national security is our debt. The process stinks. It's an abomination. It's a no good, rotten way to run your government.
Meanwhile, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy says any bills from GOP senators who vote for the budget measure will be dead on arrival if he is Speaker. The U.S. Supreme Court has temporarily blocked an order lifting Title 42 pandemic-era restrictions on asylum seekers. Arizona Senator Kyrsten Sinema describes the situation at parts of the southern border.
Let me be clear. This is a humanitarian and security nightmare.
Some 20,000 migrants are reportedly waiting to enter the U.S. near El Paso, Texas. Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts grilled then Wells Fargo CEO Timothy Sloan over the bank's fake account scandal.
At best, you are incompetent. At worst, you were complicit. And either way, you should be fired.
Wells Fargo will now pay nearly $4 billion to settle allegations by the Consumer Federal Protection Bureau, stating it illegally charged surprise overdraft fees and froze consumer accounts. EPA Administrator Michael Regan says new rules regarding emission standards for heavy-duty vehicles will help protect the health of 72 million Americans living near truck freight routes.
Those overburdened communities are directly exposed to pollution that leads to respiratory and cardiovascular problems, among other serious and costly health effects.
It is the EPA's first update to emission standards since 2001. Finally, the January 6th committee will release its full report today, which includes criminal referrals against former President Trump and ethics complaints against several Republican lawmakers. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The Internal Revenue Service didn't audit Donald Trump for 2 years while he was in the White House, despite tax reviews of sitting presidents being required by law. Yesterday, the House Ways and Means Committee voted to make Trump's tax returns from 2015 to 2020 public. The committee received the tax documents from the IRS earlier this month after years of court battles. Reporting by the New York Times in September 2020 revealed that Trump did not pay any federal income tax in 10 of the 15 years before his White House victory. In 2016 and 2017, he paid just $750. Trump was the first presidential candidate since Richard Nixon to not release his tax returns.
You are listening to an end-of-year membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Kay Rambo, editor-in-chief at Street Roots, about the importance of housing stability for outreach workers. At 6 p.m., it's Earth Riot Radio. At 6:30, it's Free Culture Radio. Then at 7, Culture in Motion with Mike Crenshaw. Tonight's weather will be windy with an overnight low of 17 to 22 degrees, depending on where you are. A wind chill advisory is in effect tonight through Friday morning. Tomorrow's weather, especially cold, with high winds and a daytime high of 23. Today in history, in 1913, a new type of puzzle created by Arthur Wynn, originally called the Word Cross, was published in the New York World. It would later be recognized as the first crossword. The quote of the day is from American novelist F. Scott Fitzgerald, author of The Great Gatsby. He died this day in 1940. He wrote, quote, The test of a first-rate intelligence is the ability to hold two opposing ideas in mind at the same time and still retain the ability to function.
Farmer and consumer advocacy groups recently wrote a letter to the Federal Trade Commission urging the agency to block the proposed merger of grocery chains Kroger and Albertsons. They say the consolidation would balloon Kroger into a grocery megachain, rivaled only by Walmart, and further concentrate power over the nation's food retail markets. Nadia Ramlagan has the story.
Two major U.S. grocery chains, Kroger and Albertsons, are seeking the green light from the Federal Trade Commission to merge their companies. Critics say the move would form the largest grocery chain in the nation, second only to Walmart, shrink the power of suppliers and workers, and drive more independent grocers out of business. Farmer and consumer advocacy groups recently wrote a letter urging the agency to block the consolidation. Aaron Johnson with Rural Advancement Foundation International USA, or RAFI, says it's increasingly difficult for local and regional producers, small food processors, and small meat packing plants to get their products onto shelves in front of consumers.
When these grocery firms combine into these really, really large companies, a big thing that they do is they really centralize how they source the products that are going onto the shelf. It becomes much more difficult for local and regional producers to get access to that retail shelf space.
In a press release, Kroger argues its acquisition of the Idaho-based chain will expand consumer reach and improve access to affordable food to approximately 85 million households. The FTC is expected to make a decision sometime next year. Johnson says Kroger and Albertsons are part of an alarming trend of consolidation within food, retail, and wholesale industries over the past few decades.
Right now, the top four grocery corporations capture almost two-thirds of consumer food sales.
He says predatory pricing and other tactics used by major players have resulted in more local producers, especially organic growers, losing wholesale contracts. Between 1994 and 2019, the overall number of grocery stores nationwide declined by 30%, according to Food and Water Watch. This is Nadia Ramlagan for North Carolina News Service.
The Rosebud Sioux Tribe in South Dakota is struggling with a winter emergency, and more are on the way. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
The Rosebud Sioux Tribe in South Dakota is currently dealing with a winter weather emergency as the forecast includes more extreme cold and dangerous wind chills. Wayne Boyd is the tribe's chief of staff. Boyd says Rosebud was hit with a snowstorm last week and is continuing to deal with more than 3 feet of snow and cold.
We have people out of propane, out of food. We have sick people. It's quite a emergency.
Robert Oliver, the tribe's emergency manager, says they're working around the clock to address the situation and open roads. The tribe does not have proper equipment to remove the snow and is seeking to obtain heavier equipment. Oliver says some communities were without electricity for 4 days.
In that time, they were starting to run low on food, wood, and their pipes were freezing.
Oliver says people did not have dialysis treatment for up to 5 days. The tribe started to get people treatment on Saturday. He says there are still communities on the reservation that need to be accessed. Those areas have up to 20 feet tall snowdrifts. There are 2 shelters open on the reservation. Food distribution is being planned with the Feeding America organization. The tribe is in contact with the state, the Red Cross, and federal agencies for assistance. In the meantime, Oliver is asking people to take precautions.
Stay home whenever those conditions warrant it. It is going to get cold. We don't need anybody getting frostbite. It's chilly out right now.
Oliver says about 25,000 residents are being impacted by the weather emergency on the Rosebud Reservation. An initiative by the Wisconsin Department of Transportation is honoring tribal communities with highway signs in both English and Native American languages. The Secaugan Chippewa community in Mole Lake is the latest, as WXPR's Katie Thorson reports.
No matter where you go in the country or state, highway signs for places are fairly uniform. Giant green signs with big black letters in white mark the location, letting you know what town or city you're in. A new sign recently installed in Mole Lake prominently reads Sacaugan Chippewa Community with the tribe's seal beside it. But different from the vast majority of similar signs you find across the country, this one includes the tribe's name in their own Ojibwe Mo'an language.
Thagaiganeen. It's a spiritual cultural light that was in the water. It was part of our teachings and our migration stories and our teachings that came about a long, long time ago.
Sacaugan Chippewa Community Chairman Robert Van Zyl was proud to unveil the new sign in a ceremony alongside community members and officials from federal and state transportation offices.
It's very positive. It's heartwarming to see these dual language signs come to life.
The Sacaugan Chippewa community is the fourth tribe in Wisconsin to install a dual language sign. The Wisconsin Department of Transportation launched the initiative in 2021. Wisconsin DOT Secretary Craig Thompson would like to work with all of the tribes within the state to get these signs up.
It's become a priority to bring back and preserve native languages, and so this was one way that we could help and participate in that. But it's also important for people in Wisconsin, people traveling through Wisconsin, to know our history, know when they're entering these sovereign nations, and to see it in the initial language. So we think it's important on all those fronts.
And it is that sovereignty that Van Zyl hopes people will think of when they see that sign.
It's when you have your language, your culture, and your identity, you have sovereignty. And so that's what we want to express to people.
I'm Katie Thorson reporting.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The FDA is speed-tracking approval from the Maryland-based company Emergent BioSolutions for an over-the-counter Narcan spray. Supporters say it's critical to remove barriers to the opioid overdose reversal medication, but are worried about the anticipated price tag. As Nadia Ramlagan reports, advocates argue that the price puts Narcan out of reach for the people who need it most.
West Virginians could soon be able to purchase Naloxone, brand name Narcan, without a prescription. Earlier this month, the FDA fast-tracked the application for an over-the-counter spray version of the overdose reversal medication submitted by Maryland-based Emergent BioSolutions. Advocacy groups say they're balking at the price, which has skyrocketed over the past few years. Director of Musicians for Overdose Prevention, John Kennedy, expects an over-the-counter price tag of at least $100. Which he says is cost prohibitive for people who need it most, and for nonprofit groups working to distribute Narcan at the community level.
At $80 to $90 a Narcan kit, someone who's a user, they can't afford that. If we're distributing 2,000, 3,000 kits a year, which we are, that's into the hundreds of thousands of dollars, and we can't afford that either.
According to data from Health Affairs, Narcan nasal spray has a list price of around $150. In a press release, Emergent BioSolutions, which has not yet confirmed a cost if an over-the-counter spray were approved, said so far millions of prescription Narcan has been distributed across the U.S. Kennedy believes the high cost is aimed at getting local and state governments to pay for stocking large quantities of the medication in health departments, fire stations, and ambulances. He points out states and municipalities have received hundreds of millions of dollars from opioid settlements.
Emergent BioSolutions has positioned themselves to kind of move the funds from one big pharma company, which is Purdue, through the government, and now we're moving it directly into the pockets of another big pharma company.
He also points to the growing presence of fentanyl mixed into illicit drugs as a reason to ensure widespread and affordable access to naloxone.
Now fentanyl's in pills, in meth, in cocaine, in just about every powdered substance.
According to the CDC, more than 1,300 West Virginians died of a drug overdose in 2020. This is Nadia Ramlagan for West Virginia News Service.
Home biogas is a new machine that transforms food waste into renewable energy. While the technology isn't new, it still raises many questions. Edwin J. Vieira reports.
In the fight against climate change, one everyday item could become a viable renewable energy source. food waste. Home biogas is a system that breaks down food waste into energy through the process of anaerobic digestion. That's when, in the absence of oxygen, microbes break down organic matter such as food waste, according to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. While home biogas is relatively new, using anaerobic digestion for the purpose of breaking down food waste isn't. Shakira Hobbs is an assistant professor at the University of California, Irvine. She finds one challenge of anaerobic digestion is ensuring the pH is balanced.
You don't want to create a pickled environment. You want it to be in the pH range of 6.8 and 7.2. Another challenge is the food waste. So before you can put it into your anaerobic digester, you need to be able to break it down into small pieces.
She says to think of this like human digestion, where chewing breaks down food into smaller parts before swallowing. Hobbs says getting the pH to a less acidic level would require something like manure or sludge, which would be easier to obtain in a rural environment. In cities and urban areas, some wastewater treatment plants utilize anaerobic digestion, although they don't always use the fuel it produces. One question Hobbs poses regards whether food waste needs to be in a landfill or can it go to a wastewater plant for anaerobic digestion. However, not all food waste is a prime candidate for this. She describes what food waste would work for anaerobic digestion.
You don't want to put bones into your anaerobic digester because it doesn't break down as quickly as readily available. So your banana peels are something that's great. Your leafy vegetables, a majority of your fruits. Your meats are fine as well.
Hobbs notes the process is akin to composting. She thinks the area for innovation with this would be single-family homes or making this available for community use. She has brought anaerobic digestion to other parts of the world as the co-founder of BioGals, which aims to empower women of color and work with communities to co-create solutions for a climate-friendly world. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, Virginia News Connection.
It's Wednesday, and that means a visit from KBOO News poet Dan Raphael, who finds little solace in the solstice.
The new solar year begins with a couple nights in the teens, wind chill tomorrow of zero, still enough time for the mayor's police to evict more homeless folks from the meager shelters they have, giving them the darkest days of their year. A thin personal version of the Russians, denying Ukrainians heat, electricity, and water as winter begins. Best thing to do with a Christmas tree there is burn it for warmth. As Jesus was born in the equivalent of a garage or non-moving motorhome.